I don't know. I guess I'm starting. I'm taking a deep breath. I'm like, I don't know. My coffee's already cold. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Are we starting?
Yeah, we're starting. We have to now. My coffee's gone.
Oh, jeez Louise. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, good morning.
Good morning. It's a morning. We haven't recorded in a morning in a while.
You know, we haven't. We've been doing those evenings, so no cans to pop open.
No cans to pop. Just bitching about no coffee.
Great way to start. So we're caffeinated, but that comfort. For me, the coffee, it's not even about the caffeine. It's the comfort. It's holding the warm cup.
It's routine. It's part of my morning ritual.
Yep. And actually, I finally, after a year and a half of working at home, was pulling some stuff out of the boxes I brought back with me from the office. And I have one of those, it's made by Mr. Coffee, believe it or not, a cup warmer that you can put your mug on and it keeps it hot. And I haven't been using it this whole time because I can just walk into the kitchen and throw the coffee in the microwave if it sits too long. But I finally set that up on my desk, and I am once again in the habit I used to be, which is starting a cup of coffee at like 8 and drinking it until 11 o'clock.
Good Lord.
Oh, I can nurse that for a long, long time.
I don't understand why one would need to warm their coffee. My coffee is usually gone before it gets cold. I have been known in virtual meetings to get up and go to the microwave and refill my coffee cup because it's like more coffee.
In the middle of the meeting.
Yep.
Nice.
No, I take my computer with me.
Oh, you walk everyone over there. That's even better.
Yep. I'm like, we're going for more coffee.
I try. What you should do is just keep the coffee pot next to your desk.
Yeah, I can't do that.
And yet, now you're thinking about it.
No.
But you are a little bit.
No, I'm not. Not doing that. Not going there. That was graduate school. It was very bad.
I am down to one cup a day, thanks to the doctor.
Oh, yes. You have that problem.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have to nurse my one cup very carefully.
It's the same reason why I don't like brew my own beer or have a kegerator in the house. Because if I had a coffee pot next to me, it would be all I would consume.
Right.
And that's like I said, graduate school, there were some issues.
You'd still have to get up in the middle of a meeting to get the coffee pot refilled for the next pot. It would just be, you'd be on a different scale, but the habits would remain.
It would just, the pot would keep getting bigger. I've had one of those like commercial bun coffee like you have for conferences. Mm-hmm. Where you get up in the morning, you dump an entire thing of like Hills Brothers coffee in the top of it.
It's your birthday coming up soon.
It is, but...
Oh, okay. You know. That's an idea. I've been looking for an idea. There we go.
Yep. Industrial bun coffee warmer. That's what I need. Yeah.
Nice. Uh-huh. Oh, plans are afoot. Okay. You start talking about the topic. I'm getting on Amazon and seeing what I can find here.
Super.
Bun. Is that bun with two ends? Bun
it's two ends. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Bun coffee maker. Oh, yeah. They're oh, yeah. Easy. Home Depot can have it at your door in time for your birthday.
Oh, yeah. I don't need that. Thank you.
Fantastic.
If you're shopping at Home Depot, I'd rather have you look for a few other things.
Oh, I can only imagine. I can only imagine.
Yes. Okay. Enough about coffee at Home Depot. We're going to talk about twine today.
We are.
Twine. Yes. Such an exciting topic.
Can I say it?
You can.
Let's tie one on.
Thinking all night for stupid dad puns
It's been burning a hole in my pocket, that one. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. We're going to talk about twine today. Because why? Because why not? It's our show, damn it. We can talk about whatever we want.
You know, just like with kids when they can't tie their shoes and they make them with Velcro, why can't we just hang the hops with Velcro? Wouldn't that be so much easier?
So the where this one came from, I'm going past that because you're not even trying. From time to time, I lurk on the interwebs on various hop grower forums. And back in the day, I used to chime in and say a lot of things. Now, there's just too much stupid, so I don't say anything. And there's a half a dozen people on forums, whether it's Facebook or some of these other Quora or Reddit or things like that that are always running their mouth. Mm-hmm. And when I open my mouth, it's suddenly I'm the bad guy. But anyway, people don't like logic. Some of the stuff that just keeps coming up and up and up over and over and over again is the same damn questions and the same arguments and debates and whatnot. And so that's where this twine thing came from, which is like, hey, you know, newbie I'm a newbie pro grower. Okay, you're a pro grower. What does that mean? Pursuant to an episode we had like 600 or 700 weeks ago.
Yeah, and a newbie pro grower. I mean, that's
a newbie pro grower, right?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to determine what's the best twine to use. Okay, if you're a pro grower, you're trying to determine what the best twine to use is. What the hell does that mean? And so then there was this huge diatribe of everybody chiming in about what's the best twine and how to use it. No, don't even use twine. You got to use wire because that's what the Europeans use, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, ooh, podcast topic.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the intricacies of your twine choice and what's out there. What's the most common twine choices? Because I'm sure we'll rattle off a few, the science or the behind them, right? Why they do what they do and why some may be better suited for some environments than others. And then somebody's going to say, yeah, but you didn't talk about blah, Kevin. Shut up. What do I like to say? You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. Yeah, there's no way. I mean, I feel like the last couple episodes you talked about, the 87,000 varieties of apples and the, you know, 2,400,684 types of honey. So, yes, there's lots of ways to tie your hops up. We'll go over some of them.
Right. So let's break it down, right? You know that hops need to climb up something. That's what they do. In order to get optimum yield, pursuant to the 200-some episodes or however many we've done so far, you'll tell me 100, 137, definitely 137.
I think that actually might be the right number. It's real damn close. Now you got me looking it up.
That hops need height. Period. There are some dwarf varieties out there that may or may not be commercially viable, but hops need height. I don't care what they're climbing up, frankly, as long as it's vertical. Now, can it be slightly tilted to the side like and all that good kind of stuff? Whatever. But it's got to get height. It needs so many nodes above the ground vertically in order for optimum flowering. We know this. Mm-hmm. So it's a question of how do we get it up there? Well, yes, back in the day, it was wire because it was cheap, like steel, iron wire, thin iron wire. And in Europe, it was cheap to get, cheap to make. They had raw materials around. Yeah, they would have a stake in the ground that they'd tie that wire to, and it would go up to the main wire run across. You know, it's very thin gauge, right? Very, very tiny cross section. But that's just the way they did it. And of course, because they used what they had, what was the most readily available, because it's not quite a tropical climate there. So you're not growing some of these other natural fiber plants we're going to be talking about. And it was that kind of stuff wasn't that easy to get. And nobody was growing that much hemp, which would really be the best naturally rot resistant fiber for that region, and processing it into twine because it was being used for more valuable things. So wire it was. And we're fine, right? Something sure. For hops to climb up. Can you use wire today? You bet.
I imagine the difficulty comes in the mechanical harvesting side.
Correct. So many of the growers in the U.S., the newbie pro growers that have brought over harvesters, wolf harvesters from Europe, have found that, and certainly ones that have not been refurbished and gone through yet, have found like, what in the hell? There's wire all over the inside of this machine. Wire wrapped around the drums, the chopper knives that are in there to chop up the bine are also chopping through wire. And so there's nicks through it all. It's just like, these things are beat to absolute hell. And even some of them have cross travel magnet, which is a belt with magnets on it that travels perpendicular to the trash chute to pull the wire out of all of the chopped up bines. So you can actually send the bines out to the field to be composted and pull the wire out of it.
Huh.
So yeah, it's a thing. it works, right? Here's the issue. It works pretty well. I'd say it works reasonably well for low vigor plants. Because there's really no tooth, right? The wire is smooth. Even when it rusts a little bit, the wire is still smooth. And so you have a scenario where if you've got a really high vigor plant as it's growing quickly, before it's become woody, the main vines become woody and it's kind of self-supports, it can start growing, you know, scrolling up this wire, and really the trichome hairs on the vine don't have anything to grab onto. And so really it's just relying on the rigidity of its own stem to hold it up.
Sure.
You know, all that force is being held up against gravity by the vine itself. And if you're not, if that vine hasn't become woody yet, it's very, well, it's not strong enough, and just, it will slip down and slip down and slip down. And we see that with growers, smaller growers in the U.S. who have been trying wire with vigorous U.S. type varieties, as opposed to these more noble type that tend to have lower vigor. That's really the only issue I've seen from a production side with wire, is that sometimes you get the slippage. But knock yourself out. The challenge there is how you attach it. And that's going to be a common theme amongst some of these other twine types that we're going to talk about, is how do you attach this stuff? So you've got to have somebody at the top wrapping it around, you know, the main high line, and then you've got to attach it to the ground somehow. As you can imagine, you stake it into the ground, it's going to rust.
Yeah.
In no time flat. And it's going to break off, and now what? Now you've got a wire flapping around in the wind. So you got to wrap it usually to something, usually a stake. So that's something else that you need to put in your yard, is something physical in the soil to attach this piece of wire to. That, in some cases, for more mature yards, I've seen people like wrapping them around old stumps of last year's vines after harvest. You mean like, yeah, that's all right. Why won't that work? Well, I mean, it will, but as the plant starts growing up it and the wind can catch it and it starts wiggling around on that dead tissue, it's just going to pop off, mm-hmm. or has the likelihood of popping off. So most of what I've seen people driving hooks or something similar into the ground at every location to tie this wire to. So that's one more thing in the yard. Plus, now you have something else in the yard that's going to prevent you from, like, mowing everything down in the fall.
Yeah.
So you have this. And believe me, we've been there. I'll tell you what we did for 3 years because we couldn't get enough labor to tie twine. So there are pros and cons to all of these things. So I think that's why you see the use of this kind of vertical support, whether it's wire or even natural fiber that's not pre-cut, and they're using hooks on the main high line and stakes in the ground on smaller yards where you're not looking to do a lot of heavy pseudo automation, industrial farming. Let's put it that way.
Sure, sure. But the lack of that automation means a lot of hands in the dirt.
Correct. Yep. That's why then you need to keep that farm smaller, because of things like, you can't be using cultivation and hilling up as your primary weed prevention, because you're going to be burying your hooks. And then you can't go through your ground stakes you're going to be burying. And then you can't go through with the top cutter then to cut your mound down, because you got all these metal hooks all over the place. So it's a catch-22. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's wire. And that's kind of the legacy of wire. And you would think, like, why in the hell would I use wire and not instead of twine? Well, you use what you've got.
Sure.
And that's it.
And you use what you know. I mean, we've talked before about the fact that where a lot of these practices originated in Europe, a lot of things haven't changed.
Right.
And irrigation being a primary example, but things just haven't changed.
Right. And you know, I have hop grower friends now, and yes, I have friends. I said it before you could say it.
Man, my mouth was open. The air was coming up.
Yep. In the Czech Republic, in Belgium and whatnot, that are absolutely adamant that, no, this is how you do it. This is how you grow hops. Everybody else is wrong. And I'm sure I know there are people in the U.S. that are like that too. But frankly, you see as much hop production as we have across the planet. You see how many different ways people are doing it. The answer is no, there isn't one way to do it. There's lots of ways to do it. And let's just talk. That's why I want to talk about all these options. And so hopefully people could, if they are looking for a new option, they could make an informed decision on the pros and the cons. Mm-hmm. So I would say pro for wire is I don't know what the pro for wire is, frankly.
Is there a financial pro? Is it cheaper than?
Not anymore. Huh? I mean, if you look at the price of steel right now, it's just ridiculous. So I could only imagine how much it would cost me to string a yard in wire right now. It just would be ridiculous when you're looking at 2 cents a string for something like core. There's no way wire can compete with that.
Right.
So if you had to go out and buy it, now some people may have surplus or they may have stuff laying around or they found something at an auction or blah, 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 whatever, right?
It seems like everyone we talk to has a friend at the telephone company.
Oh, right, yeah.
And has used poles and used wire. And of course, my response is always, if that stuff's out of service, why do you think it's out of service?
Will wire work? Yes. Do I think it's a likely candidate for common use? No, I don't. And I think you see that in the industry. It's just not widely used.
Right. I mean, you were very specific. Low vigor, small yard.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because that's what I told you. Take it to the bank. So outside of that, you're really left with two other categories outside of wire. You're left with natural fiber and synthetic fiber. And there's a whole host of different types of subtypes within those two groups. So I think the first thing people look to or first thing they think about when they think about twine is they think of a natural fiber. Mm-hmm. Of course. Makes sense, right? Let's talk about those. And so they say, well, where do you get your core twine? Well, I don't use core. What? What do you mean you don't use core? You have to use core. Why? Why can't I use sisal? Why can't I use jute? Why can't I use cotton? Why can't I use flax? Why can't I? And it's like, why core? Well, that's a good idea. Yeah, let's start talking about it because that's the most commonly used natural fiber, core. Why use core? Well, it's reasonably rot resistant, which is important. So that means it's going to get you through a production season without falling apart. It's reasonably inexpensive, or used to be. That's changing right now. It's a natural material, and it's frankly a waste product from coconut industry. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a brown, hairy stuff on the outside of a coconut. So yeah, it's plentiful. What are the bad things about it? It's bulky. And the reason it's bulky is because if you look at the fiber itself, and the fiber is reasonably, it's not very long. You might be like, yeah, it is. It's really long. When you look microscopically, the fiber itself is, it's okay. Yeah, it's moderately long. It's hollow. So the fiber itself is actually hollow. It's not like a solid fiber. So it, for its strength, it takes up a lot of space. Mm-hmm. As a result of it being hollow, it also absorbs a huge amount of water. And where other natural fibers shrink when they get wet, core can actually stretch. And so if you're so many growers, and even like Dan Carey at New Glarus, he's like, I hate it when the twine starts to stretch and gets all droopy. It just drives me nuts. I'm going to go out there and tighten it up. I'm like, don't use core. He's like, what? But you have to. I'm like, no, you don't. Because something like sisal doesn't do that. Hmm. Sisal does the opposite. When it gets wet, it expands, but it expands in its diameter, and that makes its length shrink as a fiber, and that makes it more taut. But core, by virtue of it being hollow, doesn't do that. But the hollowness is also where it gets part of its strength from. So, I mean, it's a total catch-22, right? The other thing core has going for it, too, is it's got a high content of silica in its actual fiber, which makes it more rot-resistant than some of these other fibers. But you absolutely do not need to use core. You do not need to use it.
And core is what we used for as long as I can, if I remember correctly. And didn't we get it from Sri Lanka, I want to say?
Yeah, yep. And it all comes from Sri Lanka, it comes from Vietnam, it comes from Indonesia, it comes from the Pacific Rim. And the Indian Ocean region.
I still get form submissions to the Hopnology website about core providers wanting to sell it to us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just to this day. Every season it comes through.
And I don't know how the hell you're going to get it with the way shipping containers are backed up right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we would order it by the container because it was cheap. It was, when we were buying it wholesale, if we could get a full 40-foot container full of bales of twine, which is like 200,000 strings or something like that, or 300,000 strings, pre-cut, that was also convenient. It was like 1.5 cents U.S. per string.
And we would, of course, buy much more than we needed and sell some of it because people didn't need to buy by the boatload.
Right, exactly. And we didn't need that much either. So, but that's really, if you didn't want to pay 15 or 20 cents a string, that's how you had to buy it.
Yep.
So once a year, I was going to the bank to do a wire transfer to some dude in Sri Lanka for $20,000 worth of twine. but then we could also resell it and recoup our cost and then some. But it's cheap. It's cheap if you can get it in bulk. However, it's not as cheap as some of these other options, which is why I don't understand these other options not being more commercially viable. So, core's great. Drawbacks, how far it has to come to get to you, and the fact that you've, in order to make it cost competitive, you have to buy it in huge bulk. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's great.
Yeah. You know, it makes me wonder, you, when at the end of a discussion, the prior discussion on wire, you were talking about, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the other benefits. I suppose from a storage, if you're buying multiple years worth at a time, storing wire is a lot simpler than trying than having too much core or anything else that's going to just take up that much more space.
Absolutely. Core takes up a huge amount of space in these bales, and you have to keep them inside. Otherwise, they're going to rot when they get wet sitting outside. And even though they're wrapped up in poly bundles, usually they're going to rot. They're going to mold. It's a natural fiber. So you've got to store it inside. And these are big bales. You could, and I wanted, the next one I want to talk about, sisal, I'll give you an example of space, how much sisal you can store in the same space as you could store core. Cause we did it. It's amazing.
Am I remembering incorrectly that we would soak in water before we hung them?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we'd soak them in water because it makes them more pliable. Mm-hmm. Because they're very stiff and difficult to tie in a tight knot. So if you get it wet and they're more supple, you can get a knot that's fairly tight as you're tying it on the main line. And then as it dries, it shrinks a little bit and it pulls it tighter.
Makes sense.
That's why we would do it. Yeah. Everybody I know on the pro level who's hanging core twine soaks their twine.
And I imagine if you don't and you tie it, it can very easily loosen when it gets wet, and then you got a problem.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the next one, sisal twine.
Sisal.
Right? So I told you your core comes from the coconut. Sisal comes from a plant in the agave family. And its fibers are long. They're long, and that's important for a string. To have long fiber. That's why, like, cotton twine is not so strong, because it breaks easy, because the fibers aren't very long. Sisal grows in Central and South America mostly, some in North America, Mexico, but mostly Central and South America. Natural fiber, reasonably rot resistant, about as rot resistant as coras. It is not a hollow fiber, it's a solid fiber. Strength wise, at the same, let's say, weight for weight, it is much stronger than core. But you don't find sisal. You might find sisal rope that's, you know, monster gauge, but that's not usually what we're looking at. We're usually looking at what we call natural baler twine. So this is the natural twine that is used for hay bales. Not the poly stuff, not the plastic stuff that everybody's using now, but the actual natural stuff. And it is usually, it comes in three different gauges, so three different thicknesses. And as you would imagine, they have different tensile strengths. And so we would use about the mid gauge. And it was about half to a third of the thickness of a strand of core twine, but equally as strong, if not stronger. And where, let's say that core could, I could get, let's say, 2 cents a string for at 20 feet. The sisal comes in spools. It wasn't pre-cut. So that's one of the first downsides. It's not pre-cut. It comes in a spool. And I could get the equivalent 20-foot length for about 0.75 cents.
Okay, significant.
Significant when you're talking hundreds of thousands of strings. And it was readily available because I could get it. I could drive to my tractor supply store and pick up pallets of it. I don't have to have it shipped from Sri Lanka. So another benefit. Downside, like I said, it's not conveniently pre-cut into 20-foot lengths.
Yeah, that's a pain in the ass.
It's a pain in the ass. And so for smaller growers, what I see them doing, if they are using sisal, is in the wintertime or in the off-season, what they'll do is they'll make up a little a jig with like two posts that are as long as whatever it is they want their twine to be. And then they take that spool and wrap it around those posts and then just cut the ends. And now they've got a bunch of twine that's the right length. And have some buddies over, drink some beers. You could knock out your entire next season's worth of strings in sisal in a couple of hours.
Yeah, and it's still, it pays for itself there. And especially so, the more you drink, the more fun it is to run with the reel around those posts over and over.
Exactly. So cheap. Let's talk about the space savings. I mentioned it earlier, but go ahead. What'd you want to say?
I was just going to say, isn't sisal, you're going to laugh at me, isn't sisal what they use in cat trees for scratchers?
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's rope, though. So you can get in the twine form. Sometimes they'll call it twine, but in the U.S., we call it baler twine for hay bales. Mm-hmm. But you want the natural fiber stuff, not the plastic stuff. We'll talk about synthetics here in a second. But
I'm just trying to think about how we can get the cats to help to cut the
twine. Oh, right. Yeah, tie a little ball on it, throw it over. They could chase it. I don't know. Or they'll just pee on it. Which, great.
Well, then it's perfect for, then you have to make sure you grow some citra on there for your IPAs.
Oh, right, exactly.
So it all works.
It's how citra gets that way, right?
The natural cat pee flavor.
Yep, cat pee flavor. 100% natural. You're
talking about space.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, so bales of core twine. I think there were 2,000 strings in a bale. You know, and this bale was like 2 foot by 2 foot by 3 foot cube for 2,000 strings. I could get the double that number of strings out of a spool of sisal, baler twine, that takes up the equivalent of 1 cubic foot.
Wow.
Right? So an entire pallet of sisal twine of the appropriate gauge was enough twine for me to string my yard or whatever acreage, 60 acres or so, by like 4 years compared to 2 full bales of core twine, which would get me down 3 rows once.
Wow.
Yeah. So big difference. And it was less than half the cost.
Cost less, takes up less space. I'm waiting for the downside here.
Well, the downside is it's not pre-cut.
Yeah.
So you've got that to deal with. The other thing that you get with natural sisal baler twine is it's usually treated, because obviously if you're making hay bales, you don't want those bales to break apart. And so they usually treat it with something in order to help improve its rot resistance. And usually you'll see it's like dyed green and you're like, ooh, I don't want to use that. Well, they put some chemical on it. Actually, what they treated it with was green dyed mineral oil. That's it. That's what it's treated with. And that mineral oil acts as a water repellent. So it improves its longevity in the environment. That's it. So don't freak out.
Okay, because I was freaking a little, but I'm glad you
freaking,
clarified
that. Yeah. We stomped it in the ground. So we also we also tied it to stakes, which I'm not going to get into right now, but as a way to do this. But we also stomped it in the ground. And guess what? It lasted as long as core did in the ground. So what's the problem? I don't get it. People say you can't use baler. I wouldn't use the lightest weight stuff because it doesn't have enough tensile strength, but the mid-gauge, perfectly fine. Use it. It's just not pre-cut. Maybe somebody wants to start a sisal cutting business. I don't know. But for most of our listeners who don't have thousands of acres, right, or even hundreds of acres, you could cut enough sisal in a weekend or a day to have more twine than you are going to need in any given season and save yourself a ton of money, and it's easier to get. But I would first go to sisal before I go to something like jute or jute, J-U-T-E. Mm-hmm. Jute is obviously a natural fiber. You're going to see it all over the place. It's much softer. It's almost like a yarn. Then like sisal's really raspy and stiff. But the jute has a shorter fiber, and the reason it's softer is if you look at it under a microscope, it's kind of hairy. It's got all these little subfibers coming off of it. Hmm. That's great for holding water. So it will suck up water and hold onto it. And that just means it's going to rot faster. Because it doesn't have nearly as much silica in its fibers as sisal and core does. So it holds water great, like a sponge. And it's more prone to microbial decomposition than sisal or core are. Can you use jute? Absolutely. It's also got a much shorter fiber length, so it's going to be weaker. So you're going to have to use a larger diameter yarn. But you can do whatever you want. I personally wouldn't use it. If that was the only thing I could use, if it was that or wire, I would use the jute just for mm-hmm. ease of handling and knowing it's going to break down. But I think you're probably going to find, if you start looking around for sourcing this stuff, you're not going to find it in bulk like you will sisal for hay bales, certainly in agricultural areas. And I don't think it's going to be as price competitive, but it is out there. I mean, it's available. So know that it's there. Also, again, mostly coming from Central and South America, also from parts of the African continent, because these are all tropical plants, obviously, as I've second here, let me look my notes here. There it is. So that's jute. Let's talk about Manila rope, M-A-N-I-L-A. It's also Manila twine. Sometimes they call it Manila hemp. I don't know that it's not actually from a hemp plant. Okay, here it is. Yep. So it was originally called hemp rope, but doesn't come from hemp. So when people think, oh, hemp rope's the best, they're not thinking of actual hemp like CBD oil hemp. They're thinking of what we would actually now call Manila rope, which comes from the abaca plant that's native to the Philippines. And it's a very strong fiber, very, very strong fiber, which is why they make still to this day industrial ropes out of it, and ropes that are used in the maritime industries. It's with the strongest naturally occurring fiber. So got to be good for hops. Well, as such, it's used mostly in industry. So you're not going to, you can find it in kind of a twine form, but anything you're going to find is probably going to be more like quarter inch Manila rope. And it's got a tensile strength that's like 100 times or more than core. So, you know, you could hang your hops, or you could tow your truck with it. It's up to you. But I would say that certainly it's going to last a long, long time. That would be like a multiple season kind of thing. You could hang it and it would be up there for years before it rotted away.
Wow.
Very strong, very resilient, resistant to rot, not completely rot resistant, but resistant to it. It's a relative of the banana family, actually. Downside is that most of it is for industrial use, so you're not going to find it in a narrow gauge, something that's appropriate for hop production as easily. You will find it, but it's not easy. It's going to be in coils. It's not going to be pre-cut, and you're likely going to need to import it, so that means you're going to need to order a lot of it, and you're probably going to find that it's not all that price competitive. It's certainly going to be more than any of the other natural fibers ones that we've talked about.
Okay. Yeah. So far, it's you're not convincing me to do anything other than sisal.
Sisal and Core is fine. I mean, they're both fine. I mean, that's really your options. If you look at other fibers that are going to be sort of in the sisal camp when it comes to, you know, size and resiliency and rot resistance, true hemp cord, hemp twine would also work. Obviously, hemp, sustainable. We can grow it in the U.S., grow it in most of the countries that the people that listen to us. The problem is there's very few people, you know, industries actually processing hemp fiber into cordage. And when you do find it, it's usually like specialty craft kind of stuff because it's such a small niche market and it's stupid expensive. But super strong, reasonably rot resistant, and it would hold up just fine next to sisal or core, but it's no going to be anywhere near cost competitive.
Gotcha.
Again, it's got a reasonably long fiber, which is what, and silica, which makes it rot resistant. It doesn't like to absorb water very well either, which is good. It's a good thing. But you've got stuff like cotton twine, and you've got even flax, flax twine, or believe it or not, nettle twine. So nettle makes a fantastic fiber, like stinging nettles. But again, these are more boutique kind of things that you're going to find, and they're going to be stupid expensive. Cotton twine, it's not strong. It's going to rot quickly. It's 100% cellulose. Microbes, mildews, and fungus love to eat this like in seconds. And so it's just going to break on you. You would need cotton rope in order to have enough to last you the season. And even then, if you were stomping the tail on the ground, it would rot in a matter of weeks.
So what's the point? Yeah.
So what's the point? I mean, it's super available and it's cheap, but it's not cheap if you hang it and your hops keep falling down.
Yeah.
So it's just, I don't see it. Yeah.
The nettle is curious to me because we have stinging nettle around here, and I have to imagine whatever they're processing to make that into twine doesn't have that stinging property.
No. Actually, it's one of the original fibers that was like industrial fibers in the United States. Well, when we were back in the colonies, that's what clothes were made out of because it's such a resilient fiber. And yeah, it doesn't sting. It's actually a very soft fiber when you feel it. It's as soft as cotton, but you know, much, much stronger and more rot resistant. Why we don't use it more nowadays, I have no idea.
I mean, it's the reason I own a blowtorch.
Ah, well, there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that. I have a patch of nettles that I lovingly care for. I don't care for them. I just don't mow them down.
Right.
That have all sorts of cool medicinal properties and also cool fiber properties. But that's because I'm a weird geek.
Yes.
So, yes,
you are a plant geek. Yes.
Yes, I am. So we're at 40 minutes and we haven't even touched on synthetic twine, and that's okay because I'm just going to say don't use it. I don't know why anyone would. It doesn't break down. It's not easy to separate out of your hop trash, out of your harvester, like a wire is. It's frankly, I think, irresponsible from an environmental standpoint and a natural resources standpoint. It wreaks absolute hell on harvesters. And when that plastic gets wrapped around bearings and shafts and just heats up and melts, it's a nightmare. Trust me, I've been there. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
There's better options out there. If you're a hobby grower and you want to do it, knock yourself out. There are some issues with the plastic being kind of slick. And I've seen some of the same slippage problems I've seen with wire, not nearly as much. But if you're into this at all as a commercial scale, think about your post-harvest handling of your waste and what are you going to do with it? And I've heard other growers say, oh, we just pile it up and burn it. Yeah, great. Way to go.
Lovely,
yeah.
I know there's someone out there who's 3D printing their
twine.
Yeah, because it's cool.
Ooh, maybe that's our answer to the twine tying labor shortage is robotic spiders that spin their own polylactic acid, PLA plastic twine down your trellis. Pursuant to our ag robot theme.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that. Somebody should do that, not me. It's our show, damn it.